is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. For people who have been incarcerated, their problems don't stop after they're released. Many formerly incarcerated people struggle with post-incarceration syndrome, or PICS. Today, we're going to talk about PICS, the impact it has on communities, and work happening locally to advance research and care for people who have spent time behind bars. Joining me now are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Rachel Nolan. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you.
Founder and Executive Director of SOAR 4031 Foundation, Chazity Robinson. Thanks for being here, Chazity.
Thank you so much.
And University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor Samantha Bach. Welcome back, Samantha.
Thank you.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Rachel, what is post-incarceration syndrome?
Sure. It's a constellation of difficulties that individuals experience after a period behind prison bars. So we're talking about things like as checking behaviors. We're talking about having a preference for back against the wall. We can even expand the definition to think of emotional difficulties, social difficulties, economical difficulties. It's a variety of things that affect people, and not just individuals who've been incarcerated, but also their friends, their family members.
Chazity, tell me more about the kinds of effects PICS can have on people. How have you seen this really affect people?
So in my experience, from what I'm seeing, is the after effects of the trauma that people go through, because in prison, it's just they're in a repetitious state. And so when they return home, those same attributes they use once they come home. So they may be used to, like for instance, eating with metal, right? Because they've been eating with plastic for so long, that's an adjustment. I have seen not being able to get adjusted to taking a shower in a regular shower because they don't get to shower every single day. And so just bathing in the sink and not really understanding that that habit is a habit that they have obtained while being in prison. So it's like the attributes that they have gained or the things that they have done while being incarcerated, they bring those home, and then it's like trying to retrain all over again to just normalcy.
Sure. All those things they had to try to make normal while they were incarcerated. Yeah.
Right.
Rachel, what do we know about the causes of PICS?
There's a variety of causes that we hypothesize, but there isn't enough research right now to really state for a fact what the causes are. But we know that they're social. We know that there is a small genetic component. However, again, it's uncertain as to how many people are impacted. That's why the research on this is so critical, because it is limited and not a lot of people are looking at it. Mm-hmm.
Chazity, you talked about this a little bit, but tell me a little bit more about what are some of the conditions in prison that can lead to this. I wonder if you can give some more examples of people who are showing that they have PICS and what that means for their daily lives.
Yeah, so with PICS, I want to say that there's five symptoms of post-incarceration syndrome, which is institutionalized personality traits, post-traumatic stress syndrome, antisocial personality traits, social sensory deprivation syndrome, and reactive substance use disorder. And all of those traits help people identify with the things that were taken from them, because a lot of people are locked down for 23 hours out of a day. They only get maybe 2 to 3 hours in community with other people. Depending on what level facility that they're in, from a supermax down to a level one, the circumstances could be different. So imagine, I tell people all the time, if you want to go to prison, lock yourself in the bathroom and then expect me to give you everything you need for at least a day, right? And see how you can manage that. You know, being in an isolated space, your mind begins to go into another place of survival. And so those places of survival can become barbaric at times and animalistic because you're in survival mode. So for instance, food to me and you is is easy to come by. We can go to the grocery store, we can get it, right? But food inside of our prisons actually says on it, not consumable by humans. So a lot of people will not eat at chow. So commissary is a commodity in prison. And so commissary is used for trading, commissary is used for bartering. And so when you create these systems, it's like you have to be territorial over these systems that you've created. And then it goes into what manipulation is. And it develops a sense of narcissistic behavior, right? Not because they want to, it's because it's a survival tactic. And so these tactics that are used just for survival, in turn, comes off when they enter society as narcissistic gaslighting or those things that we as free people identify. But in all actuality, these are just behaviors that psychologically go in motion for survival mode. Mm-hmm. And so when people are coming home from incarceration to families, right? And families are expecting, if someone did 10 years, I sent my son or my husband or my sister, that's what they're expecting, that person that left. Mm-hmm. But the psychological effect that happens to them when they're there, they do not come back the same. And so the whole purpose of this study is to understand the position that families are in, as well as people who have been through the process, because supporting someone in that, you begin to adapt to their way of life too. And so when you take on these traits, because I myself began to become aggressive. I went to visit my mom. She was like, "Why are you talking so aggressive? You don't smile anymore. Why are you being this way?" And I didn't realize that I was. It's because 95% of my time was either advocating for someone in prison, advocating for a family, being at the prison, or advocating for my then husband. And so I didn't realize that I had taken all that on.
Yeah. We're talking about post-incarceration syndrome and its impact on families and communities. Do you have questions or personal experience with this? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. I want to get into the details of the study that you all are working on, but first, Samantha, I want to bring you into the conversation. I know you've studied more broadly the impacts of incarceration on families, on communities. Let's start with families. What have your findings been? How much does incarceration impact family units?
Substantial. So my current work was trying to elucidate how incarceration has impacted children at Cincinnati Children's, and really uncovering the impact of mass incarceration in our local context. And to do this, we searched over electronic medical records, words like incarceration, prison, or justice keywords, because pediatric health systems, they don't ask children coming in and families routinely in sensitive ways, "Has your family member been incarcerated?" They don't do that. So we had to rely, unfortunately, on searching for these terms. So that's our first disclaimer. But what we found was, over an 11-year period, 2% of the total population of children who had been seen at Cincinnati Children's had a justice keyword in their chart, meaning they're likely personally involved or their family member has been involved. And that 2% made up 65% of all behavioral health hospital admissions.
Wow.
A quarter of all emergency department visits, 45% of all foster care visits, in addition to being 1 to 16 times higher the prevalence rate of all health conditions we studied compared to a matched group, meaning children who came from socio-demographically matched backgrounds. So same zip code, poverty level, race, ethnicity. And so substantial impact on the health of youth in our community. And it wasn't, you know, and this is to provide a note of caution, this is not the best measure because we don't screen for this. But if we found a gene that described or explained 63% of the behavioral health hospital admissions, we'd be doing something about it.
Mm-hmm. And that, with that kind of impact on children, on families, there has to be a huge impact on communities too, because those children are going to schools, they're out in their communities. Have you gotten into what the broader social impact is?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are studies that look at incarceration rates of states and infant mortality and the linkages there. I think when we talk about mass incarceration and incarceration of individuals and the impact it has on families, there it's linked to many conditions and it's linked to many indicators of health because it relates to stress and trauma from the system. And so if we continue to, you know, hyper-police communities, if we continue to incarcerate from certain neighborhoods more than others, we will continue to perpetuate healthcare disparities across generations for decades. And the impact that we've already had sustaining this size, we have the largest system in the world compared to other developed countries.
Largest incarceration system, you mean?
Yeah. We will continue to see healthcare disparities and continue to lead in the poorest health outcomes. So, yeah, I think we all can be doing better, and we need to really think about mass incarceration from a public health standpoint.
Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a quick break. Later in the program, we'll discuss the rise in evictions in Hamilton County and a resource available to help. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about post-incarceration syndrome and how families can get help if a loved one is struggling with PICS, or sometimes referred to as PICS. My guests are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Rachel Nolan, founder and executive director of SOAR 4031 Foundation, Chazity Robinson, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor Samantha Bach. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Rachel, is PICS or PICS, is it recognized as a psychiatric disorder at this point?
Unfortunately, no. And what that means is that individuals may not be able to be diagnosed in a timely manner, and they might not be able to get the help that they need.
Well, we'll talk about that some more, too. But let's talk about this study you all are doing. Chazity, talk about the research that's happening at UC related to PICS, PICS, and what you hope to accomplish through that.
Yes, of course. So the study is a qualitative and I always get that wrong every time I try to say it because it's so redundant.
Yeah.
Quantitative and qualitative study. And so what we are trying to see is how the trauma of incarceration affects people who have been through it and people that support them. And so ideally what we want to do is two things. We want to get it recognized by the APA and get it into the DSM. It's important because I was asked a question the other day, like, about people being diagnosed, misdiagnosed. And they said it's 67%. I said, no, 100% of people are being misdiagnosed because PICS is not yet deemed a disorder. So therefore, we can't diagnose them, but that's exactly what they have. And so what our angle is that we are petitioning different colleges and universities across the country to adopt our research. The thought process is if we can get the research in different colleges and universities, that people who are studying in the different professions, psychology, social work, law, corrections, whatever, that they can study this as they are learning. So when they go into the professional world, they already know how to deal with it. A lot of times we're hearing from our subjects that their therapist just isn't relatable. And so this is our way of being proactive to teach and educate about it. And then another way is through the research and the data, we have been able to create a 12-week cumulative course for people to take to learn about what PICS is, And then help them work through it, learn about what their triggers are, and give them coping mechanisms and skills. And then we offer different resources like case management, job training, and those different skills packed inside of it. And so we just want to make sure that people understand that this is a public health crisis, that over 4 million people in this country are formerly incarcerated. 270,000 of them are in the state of Ohio. And Ohio is number 6 for the highest recidivism rate. And so through what we're trying to do is we're trying to either reduce or eliminate recidivism, because when we're talking about reentry, they always leave out mental health. And that is the most important part, because if you've been incarcerated or you've been in a box for 5, 10, 15 years, and then all of a sudden, in an instant, your life changes and you're free. People cannot psychologically cope with that.
It's a huge change.
It's a huge change. And so the adjustment to it, you know, they don't have buses in prison. They don't have cars. People aren't moving. They're in a like a robotic state every day. And so that's why this research is important, so we can understand what people are going through, what they are dealing with, and how we can assess it and help them.
Yeah. Rachel Chasity just there mentioned the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, and she mentioned the DSM, which, tell me if I'm wrong, I think is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Correct.
Talk about why it's so important to get PICS or PICS listed in the APA's DSM. Why does that matter so much?
Yeah, just building on what Chasity said, is it's a distinct diagnosis in itself. A lot of people say, well, isn't it just PTSD? No, it's not. PTSD is a specific diagnosis that one has or one is diagnosed with after a time in prison, such as and they experienced a trauma. And it can be diagnosed, you know, 3 months to several years later. But it's tied to a specific event, such as incarceration, whereas post-incarceration syndrome is a variety of social, economic, developmental, financial issues that individuals face after a period of being incarcerated. And to know those distinctions and to know those nuances is critically important to get the right treatment, and then also to let other people know, like in the public health profession, in the justice incarceration justice involved system, what we can do to help mitigate it.
So PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, can be a part of PICS, but it's not the whole thing.
Correct.
There's a lot more involved in there.
Yes.
Yeah. Samantha, listening to all this, I mean, if I'm correct, I don't think your research is specifically devoted to PICS or PICS, but from what you've learned with your research, does it ring true to you that people who come out of incarceration and are suffering from PICS or PICS, that is affecting their families, affecting their kids? I mean, how does this all relate to what you're looking into?
Definitely. So in addition to research, I worked as a nurse inside prisons. And so, it rings certainly true. And it makes sense that to me that there's not enough on this issue, because part of the lab that I co-run, the Health Justice Lab, we decided to look up how many projects on a federal level have been funded on incarceration. And less than 0.5% of, since 1985, incarceration has been funded at the NIH, NSF, and DOJ combined. And 23 projects ever funded since 1985 just on children of incarcerated parents. That's shameful. And to me, again, the research on PICS, funding for PICS and treatment for PICS would substantially support people returning home. And in do that, we need to turn our eyes to the systems in play and the structures, and we need that funding, and this is a route to do that. So I think it's genius.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chasity, any idea how long this could take to do this research, to make this big change, to get PICS or PICS in the DSM so it's listed as a psychiatric disorder?
So in order to get a disorder deemed by the APA, they say it takes about 10 years. But we don't want to wait that long. It's just, it's too long because things change so much with the system. Even with the Supreme Court just ruling that homelessness is a crime, and homelessness affects the incarcerated population. That is the first person or people that it affects. And so even with Cory Booker and John Wetzel, who is the head of the National Correctional Officers Association, they were on Capitol Hill talking about how the new incarceration is about to be home confinement or house arrest, because we are at a 45% shortfall of correctional officers to man the ships in our prison. So people are going to start coming home, and that's great. We want people to be free. However, we want them to do it in a manner to where mental health services and PICS is provided before they come home and after they get home, because we can't send people home that aren't well. And sending people home to families who can't handle or help with those adjustments, even with themselves, it would be a catastrophe for us in the community. So that's why this is important. And so we really don't have a timeline on it, because I think that there's so many other things that we can expand with this research. People that work inside of the prisons suffer from PICS. Mm-hmm. You know, they are affected by it. And so I think that we just really have to focus on this part first, and then just do different phases so we can get the whole pie. And I want to add this really quick when we're talking about money. Ohio is the number 6 state for recidivism, top 10, right? And studies have shown that if we reduce recidivism by 10%, that we can save $407 million a year out of our budget. $407 million just keeping people home from incarceration. This research will do that. The programs that we have set up will do that. However, it costs, and it takes money to be able to do that. And a lot of people don't feel as if this is important. And so that's why being here and in other places to educate people on the true importance of it is necessary.
Yeah. Rachel, if PICS or PICS, if post-incarceration syndrome isn't in the DSM, how do people get it diagnosed? How do they get help? How do they get treatment?
Well, they do what they're doing now, and that's basically call people like me, call people Chazity. I mean, we both have field calls like, you know, help, my husband is coming home in 2 weeks and I have no idea what to do. And we direct them as best we can to the resources that are available, and by us continuing to put out the education so that people can recognize the signs and symptoms of that within themselves and within their children, so that this could be an entryway to talk to their therapist or talk to somebody else who's been impacted. And other people dealing with this.
Sure. Can it be cured?
I stay away from those words of cured. However, I can say that it can be helped and it can be dealt with, and it can be properly addressed. Mm-hmm. So I will say that, you know, if you have PICS, it's something that could impact you lifelong, but you can definitely find ways through Chazity's program, through coping mechanisms, through resiliency training, through all of those things that will definitely help and increase your likelihood to find joy, happiness, thrive. And that's the point of this project, is just to help people learn how to thrive from a period when they were incarcerated.
Yeah, to learn to live with it.
Absolutely.
To learn to live with it. Chazity, how difficult is it for somebody who's never been incarcerated to understand what someone with PICS or PICS is going through?
It's very hard because there's so many misconceptions. There's so many preconceived judgments about people who have been to prison. They think because they're there, they belong there, and whatever happens to them should happen. And so the stigmatization that's around incarceration, and even with people that support people and love people through their process, there's such a stigmatization around it. And so that is another thing that we try to do, is we try to break those barriers of stigmatization by always using people first language and making people feel like people, because they are people, you know. And we try to educate the community at large to say, hey, you know, that person that's scanning your groceries, or even your attorney or the attorney general, or these people are affected by incarceration. You may not know it, but they are. And so just helping people identify with what their trauma is and their triggers are, giving them coping mechanisms, and then educating the public. We would love to take this to the city. We would love to be a part of the response, mental health response team that City of Cincinnati has, that when they get those calls and somebody has a record or they're previously incarcerated, let us come out. You know, let us be a part of the conversation so that we can help you understand why they are reacting the way that they are reacting to things. So that's why this is important.
Yeah. Such important work. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Rachel Nolan, founder and executive director of SOAR 4031 Foundation, Chazity Robinson, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor Samantha Bach. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Up next, we'll discuss the rising number of evictions in Hamilton County and a resource that can help. This is Cincinnati Edition.